Dick.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great.
Good morning, Nick. I'm here with Steve this morning, and I'll be anxious to hear your wrap-up, as I've heard you all week, and feverishly trying to write notes in the car as you were talking, but now I actually have them ready. I got a pen in hand.
Good morning. Can't wait.
Well, and of course, you're going to play from home, and sorry you're not here, but you're just as dangerous in the BCBC playing remote.
Well, I appreciate it. I have good reason to be home. I'm not a particularly private person, and I've kept this to myself, but my daughter was born on Sunday morning. So that is why I am not at Santa Anita. And so it's a good reason to be home, and yes, playing from afar and hopefully just as dangerous wherever I call the plays in from.
You're already a winner.
Well, and Nick, I was waiting. Yeah, we were waiting for you to spring the news on everybody. Mazel tov to you and your wife, and very excited. And what grandmother is she named after?
It's actually perfect. Middle name of each grandmother. So her name is Alessandra Elizabeth.
Ah, outstanding. Alessandra Elizabeth, years of happiness, and delighted for you, Nick. And we'll talk
Thank
more
so
about
much.
It when we got time. I love it. And, of course, that takes all the sting out of the Astros.
Exactly. It made it feel like nothing. Right.
we'll have to talk about that at some point, because that was the craziest seven game anything I've ever watched. I had no interest in these two teams, frankly, going into the series, and then I was instantly captivated. It was an amazing 10 days.
You almost never see a series turn that many different directions in a seven game stretch. You see momentum change on a sometimes inning by inning basis, but momentum changed so much pitch to pitch and game to game. It was really, really crazy. It's a shame more people didn't watch, because it really was a very entertaining series. And even though the team I root for came out on the short end, the Nationals were better when it counted, and you can't fault them for that.
That series, for those that are looking for a parallel, the 1985 Cardinals Royals, the parallels are remarkable, including the Don Denkinger call in Game 6. You had the controversial play at first base that ended up not hurting the eventual. It hurt the Cardinals, but it's one of those. To me, that's maybe why I got engaged in the whole thing, because having lived in Kansas City and I was a season ticket holder that year, it reminded me of the I-70 series.
Yeah, that's a crazy call that I've only seen on film, and you can certainly see a parallel, of course, to what happened in Game 6, and luckily, hopefully, that won't be part of the conversation now. We'll hear about Gerrit Cole, and we'll hear about Hinch and decisions like that, but one thing that was true of the whole series is that Strasburg was amazing in his two starts, and the Astros didn't hit with runners in scoring position at home, and Wednesday night, it felt like while they had all of those opportunities early on, that everyone that they missed put them at risk. I really thought they lost the series in the fifth inning in Game 6 when they had runners on second and third with one out and Altuve at the plate, and he struck out, looked bad striking out, and then Brantley grounded out. That was their real opportunity to get control of Game 6 and hopefully eventually have won it.
Well, Verlander became Kershaw.
Whoa, that's mean. That's mean-spirited.
Just don't call A.J. Hinch Dave Roberts, please.
Oh,
he doesn't deserve it.
At least they've got, you got the title from 2 years ago. Where, right?
Exactly,
2 years ago?
Right.
Two years ago. Yeah. Nick, let's turn to the task at hand, and we'll start with Friday. Run through your thoughts through the features.
I feel like the Juvenile Turf Sprint is a race that should be somewhat favorite controlled. I think four-wheel drive is going to be pretty tough. And given his speed and the fact that there's not an overwhelming amount of speed in this race, I think makes him that much more difficult, I think, to try and take a stand against. One of the Euros that you see at least in the running lines, maybe having the most appeal is band practice, because he's got a little bit of speed, and that might be enough to keep him within range early, because it just looks like it, you want to be forwardly placed in these 5-furlong turf races at Santa Anita. So that's where, I'm sorry, band practice is she. That's where I landed. I didn't have anything particularly clever. I thought if you wanted maybe a bit of a long shot, I think people are going to try Alligator Alley. My Alligator Alley issue is that this horse has had problems getting out of the gate twice in a row, and you miss the break in this race, it's over. So that was my big concern. I think there'll be some Kamari Love and some Ali as well, both of whom look like on their best day they could have a big shot, but I ended up being relatively chalky.
No, it makes a lot of sense, and it's funny that you mentioned Alligator Alley, because for me, that's a tri-key horse. That's a horse that'll show up late and be third, and so I'm going to use him that way.
I think that makes perfect sense, and of course that gives way to the Juvenile Turf, which I thought was really an outstanding race.
Yep.
I think that the winner probably comes from a relatively small sample of horses like Trucker, Decorated Invader, and Arizona. But the horse that I'm going to play around with in the exotics is Our Country. And I say that because even though he didn't exactly make the With Anticipation look good last time, I mentioned this a couple of times in recent weeks talking to you, the inside paths on the Widener Turf course throughout the month of September were absolutely where you wanted to be. And this was a very bold outside move that Our Country was asked to make before ultimately coming up a little bit short. Now he's drawn inside. He's going to be forced into a situation where he saves ground. I think that might be enough for him to outperform his odds and maybe get a slice of this thing at 15 or 20 to 1. As I said, the main principles in here, those big three, look like the winner will more than likely come from them.
Yeah, I had a very similar, very similar look at this. Press on.
That Juvenile Fillies, I felt like the most impressive prep winner was British Idiom. And I thought that she stands to benefit most from the way the race should be run, because she could be taken a little bit off of it. If they make Donna Veloce the favorite in here, I salute anybody who wants to take a risk on a horse that's set a relatively modest pace, sprinting, stretching out to 8.5 furlongs and facing what might not be great, but is the best of her generation at this point. I think that everybody is bailing a little prematurely off of Bast. I really don't think Bast ran as poorly as a lot of people think she did last time. I wouldn't really be beaten by her. I'm not really looking forward to betting her. My only long shot possibility in there was KP Dreamin', who we talked about last week in the initial run through. She and Perfect Alibi feel like the two horses that stand to benefit most if this pace gets quick. This does look like a pace that could quicken up to me.
I like it, and KP Dreamin' has been kind of a mojo horse this week.
Yeah, that's she's the kind that can definitely get in that try at 20 to 1 and really juice up all the payoffs. I thought the Juvenile Filly Turf was pretty fascinating as well. I know the European that seems to be getting the most fanfare is Albania. We talked last week about Daye, and that Daye had more of the profile of the kind of horse that we want to look for from Europe, given that she's really excelled on firmer ground, and she will obviously get that to run over. The domestic contingent, I guess, is sort of headed by Selflessly and Cristal. I'm not really dying, and Sweet Melania, I'm not really dying to bet any of them. I thought that Sharing might be the most interesting local horse, so to speak, of them, and will probably offer the best value. I like that she'll be a little forwardly placed as well. So I didn't have anybody that I was really looking forward to making a huge bet on here. I think it'll end up being one of those kind of main type of horses.
Yeah, Sharing is who I picked, and I thought both of the Juvenile Turf races were really fun. The best part of the day.
No doubt, they're outstanding, and the Juvenile obviously lost a little bit of luster with Maxfield coming out. I don't obviously observe workouts on a regular basis. I don't want to make too much of a determination based on it. I didn't think that Eight Rings looked particularly impressive in the gallop out of his workout. And having watched Bob Baffert horses work often enough, you feel like that's usually the strength of their drills. So I think there are enough kind of cracks there with Eight Rings for you to look elsewhere. I just think Dennis Bowman is going to win. I know he probably didn't make out all that great as a post position draw, but this is a horse with plenty of early speed. And if Irad leaves the gate with his mind on business, even if he ends up letting Eight Rings get in front of him and Fox outside, I think he's going to be very tough. And I really think that he's going to vault himself into the top of the conversation about next year's Derby, because when you start to pick apart every race he's run, he's been really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree.
I want to throw out one thing, Nick, you mentioned, because you're throwing the Derby. this isn't the Derby. I've heard some people say, oh, we're going to go on about this isn't the Derby. This is the Breeders' Cup Juvenile in November. We're going to Mona 16th. We're not going to Mona Quarter. And like I said, I think Eight Rings is going to have it all his own way on the front end. Dennis Malone looks like a great horse in the Derby. Moving forward, looks like he's going to move on today. Or it is today. No, tomorrow. Today. Bob Baffert at home with the speed. Seen it too many times. I think he's going to control.
Yeah, and I think that gives way to a great point, which is that you really have to observe the surface as much as possible. We're hearing a million different things about, oh, it's tiring, oh, it's speed favoring, oh, the rail's bad. You know, it seems like it's a different thing each day. So obviously by the time we get to this, we'll know a little bit more about the surface and can sort of adjust on the fly.
Yeah, the two races, obviously, going 7/8, the two juvenile California Golden State races will tell us a lot, I think. You know, you got big fields and you got horses that are going to be trying to rally wide. So watch races 3 and 4 in particular. Nick, dive into the Saturday action.
The Philly and Mare Sprint is a race, I think, where it's not often that you get an opportunity to play against two favorites. And I think Covfefe and Come Dancing each have, there's enough going against both of them to take a chance. I'm just not certain Covfefe can take heat from the start from a couple of really quality speed horses immediately to her outside. And Come Dancing did not look quite as impressive in the Gallant Bloom as I thought she should have. Has always been kind of an acty horse. All that said, I'm going to bet Donna Destroyer. She's the kind of horse I really don't often fall for. She made a close from way far back with a very, very strong pace setup last time. I'm just banking on that happening again. Really quite simple. Her and Spice Perfection, I thought, if Spice Perfection is ridden similarly, of course she was kind of forced into the race that she ran last time based on a slow break, but if she's allowed to rate and make one run, I think those two are two that I'd love to try and squeeze into the trifecta, and even if you have some of the favorites lingering in there, that can certainly juice it up because you'll obviously get quite a bit of value on Donna Destroyer.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Listeners of Steve's show, if the world was listening, Covfefe's going to go off at 10-1. I mean, I'm serious. Everyone, right? I've really heard a strong opinion that she's going to roll. I'm in the same position. I'd take it a stand against her, too, but it's amazing. We'll see what the board does. But I really heard a big push from her, from anybody. Have you, Steve?
Not particularly. And the funny thing, I have brought up two result situations, Nick. McKenzie losing the photo in the big cap, and Shamrock Rose last year winning the Philly and Mare Sprint in a scramble. If Shamrock Rose doesn't win, we still have no three-year-old that's ever won this race, and so everybody would be saying, oh, Covfefe can't win, and these three-year-olds are up against it, and if McKenzie wins the photo with Giftbox, the whole 10 furlong, it all goes away.
Right.
It's crazy how funny. This is the Andy Serling's discussion, results orientation, you know, and how people are just, you know, obsessed with, you know, with the specific result and how it came out. I mean, even with Shamrock Rose having won, three-year-olds have not done well in this race. Period.
No, it's exactly right, and I think the rail is obviously the part of the conversation everybody's getting towards. Now, the thing is, the rail is more problematic when you're a horse that doesn't really have that much speed. She has a ton of speed. I think our concern, of course, is that she's going to have to use all of it in the first 3 to 4 furlongs in order to establish a comfortable position with those quality speed horses to her outside. I mean, quite simply, if Danuska's My Girl breaks better tomorrow than she did at Keeneland, then Covfefe really has her hands full.
Move forward, and Turf Sprint, kind of an interesting set of horses, and it's a real mixed bag, and people are all over the place here, Nick. I did an exercise with the Seth Merrow yesterday, going through the races and identifying them with S's and N's for spreads and narrows, and I don't see where you can make a stand in here.
This is like a triple S. It's funny. You and I have talked about taking stands in races that look wide open, especially sometimes in turf sprints. I love Eddie Haskell. I'm all about Eddie Haskell in here. I've been a sucker for Joel Rosario in turf sprints for a long time. I thought that his trip last time was just bad enough for him to be maybe a little bit dirtied up. I can't imagine he's going to be much more than 5-1 or so, because the money's just going to be so spread in here. But I think you're talking about very slightly different versions of all the same kind of useful horse throughout this field, and he's one that's run well locally, that's got the right kind of jockey, and I think he'll really be able to be positioned just about anywhere. Being drawn outside, really not a problem. I think that actually will end up up helping him. Totally, Boss has been super consistent throughout the year. I have no issue with him. I also think pure sensation is dangerous simply because he's going to be the inside speed. And he's much faster to the punch than Checky Shabazz. And if he's able to somehow get a little bit of separation on this field, maybe get a half length or a length in front with a jockey that's sure to really send the heck out of him out of the gate, then I think he could be very dangerous. As this, I've watched Spotify for a long turf races to try and get acclimated to these 2 days. The wire comes up very, very fast when they get off the turn of these things.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
And thank you, Mrs. Cleaver. That's all I could say to that.
You're looking very lovely. You know, and it's funny because going back to the decision when they made, when Breeders' Cup announced they were going to use the 5 furlong, this is, what, maybe 120 days ago, and Mark Glatt was on not long after, and Glatt was in a unique position because he had, you know, very effective runners for either decision, whether they were going to come down the hill or whether they were going to abbreviate it to the 5. And Eddie Haskell was the horse that, you know, we were talking. That was really the first 5 furlong beneficiary of the decision. And I think I've said every day this week, Mark Glatt winning a Breeders' Cup race, if Mark wins, everybody wins. A guy that really deserves as much limelight as he can get. Dirt Mile, Nick, and this thing, this is another race where people seem, you know, really intrigued by, you know, finding an alternative scenario to Omaha Beach.
Yeah, the participants in the Dirt Mile probably feel as if I shouldn't even acknowledge them, given my distaste.
You've been very vocal.
My comments. I've been very vocal about it. I really have lost my privileges. So I'm going to keep it very simple. I'm going to respect who is arguably the most masterful horseman in my lifetime, and I just think Omaha Beach is going to win this race. I think he's got obviously a major hometown advantage. I think he is the best horse in the race by a pretty comfortable margin, and I think that while the forbidden fruit of larger purses or things like that did not tempt his connections, I think it made the perfect decision, which was to keep him at a mile. I think if Improbable gets out of the gate, he obviously can be very, very dangerous, but I think that's enough of an if to take a stance against him as a 5-2 or 3-1 shot. I think in terms of prices that maybe can juice this thing up a little bit. I still don't want to necessarily give up on our friend Diamond Oops. I'm hopeful that Julian is able to take him back a little bit, maybe let him make one run, and of course we'll see by that point really how the track is playing. And I think Spun to Run is a little dangerous, obviously, yep, out of his comfort zone being out west, but a horse with a pretty tremendous amount of talent. So I think there are some interesting underneath type alternatives. I just think when push comes to shove, Omaha Beach is clearly the horse to beat.
Turning to the filly and mare turf, and I hadn't had a chance this morning yet to mention the news from yesterday afternoon. Dr. Rick Arthur forcing Chad Brown to scratch Thais out of the filly and mare turf, and the displeasure, I think Chad was stoic about it and, you know, professional. He really declared that there's nothing wrong with Thais, and this reminds me of last year when who was it that was pushed? Polydream. Thank you.
Well, there was the Freddie head horse, Polydream, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. A guy.
I'm sure I wonder if the conversation included him letting Dr. Rick Arthur know that she really isn't a competitive entrant. But I don't want to mock the whole thing, but it is kind of ironic.
True. And, of course, Chad also acknowledged that last year she didn't get out of the gate, never got better than 5th in the going. And so he said, you know, Sister Charlie won then, and can Sister Charlie win tomorrow now as well?
Yeah, you know what I think actually will end up helping Sister Charlie is that Thais being in these most recent races has actually made Sister Charlie a much quicker horse early. So I think racing over, obviously, what's a little bit faster footing will be no issue for her. And Mirth will do the job of Thais while actually also trying to win. So I don't really think it should be a huge problem for Sister Charlie. You know, I've really struggled for alternatives in here. I've tried Villa Marina. I've tried Fanny Logan. You know, I know there's a lot of Fanny Logan support just because of Gosden and the fact that she's kind of an up-and-coming horse. But she's really making a huge step up class-wise.
Yep.
And that was one of my concerns. So I don't have a particularly clever thought. This is positioned properly on the card for me to just kind of watch and wait for some of the better opportunities. I could see myself using Iridesa. I think Joey O'Brien's very sharp when it comes to identifying who needs to belong in these kind of places, and she'll at least be a little bit of value and is drawn very favorably.
How about the pick five? And that's a question, too, as we get to the sprint. Nick, how are you budgeting? I mean, you've got the BCBC action, but, what is your budget suggestion? You know, where are the best multi-opportunities? And give everybody a quick treatment on that.
I think that this late pick five actually is a good opportunity, especially depending on your opinion. But there are some favorites in this sequence that I think you can really dig into, and if you can narrow down in two spots, I mean, if you're a mid-range budget player and you're talking about a pick five, I'm talking about basically anybody that's going to bet between $50 and $200. If you can have two singles or two races where you maybe have a single and you're too deep, that all of a sudden, if you're playing a caveman ticket, becomes very approachable. There are a lot of people that are going to want to latch on to Mattioli in this sprint. I'm playing it. This, I think there's one chaos opportunity in this whole Breeders' Cup, and I think this is it. I think I can find enough negative stances on some of the favorites in this race to try some of the price horses. Now, that being said, there are a lot of people that are going to say, hey, Mattioli's faster than these horses early. He's going to be able to take all the heat that's given to him from both sides, and he's just going to withstand it. And if you believe that, then that's the spot that you're going to land. I don't believe that. I don't believe that Mattioli has ever looked in the eyes of a fast-speed horse and been able to overcome that, and I think he's about to get the biggest challenge he's ever faced. So that being said, I mentioned to you last week when you talked about Ron Moquette making a decision that he needed to go to the sprint, and I'm going to bet Whitmore. And I know that Mattioli has proven multiple times that he's a better horse than Whitmore. Whitmore's had some opportunities, but I think this is a time with him having gotten that break throughout the year, now second off the layoff, he's going to get a huge, huge pace to run at, and he should be absolutely flying late. So I'm going to use him with the main horses. As far as multis go, I think I will use Mattioli maybe a little bit more as a backup. I'll also use Engage, who's a horse that always had talent, and now we see him maybe getting towards fulfilling that with Steve Asmussen, not too dissimilar from what Switzerland did when moved by Woodford to Steve Asmussen off of Chad Brown. Mm. So it's a race where I'll be relatively deep, but I think there are certainly people that are going to want to narrow it down to some of the main players, such as Mattioli, Imperial Hint, and Catalina Cruiser.
Well, and depending on your opinion of Midnight Bisou, obviously Bricks and Mortar gives everybody, I'm not going to call it a free square, that's ridiculous, but you talk about finding one single or a single and a narrow tiptoe, the distaff perhaps and obviously the turf are the two places, and I would think that there's even people that are going into the mile with a very strong opinion, so why not hit almost the all button in this spot and make sure that you get to those other places?
I think that's an excellent argument, and there's really nothing that I could say to the contrary that makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, that's exactly the way you'd want to approach it if you have a mid-range type of budget, and again, like you said, if you have an opinion in the mile, it makes it a lot easier. So I guess moving on to the mile, my opinion in the mile is that while Circus Maximus is, to me, is the horse to beat based on the Group 1 races that he's run on somewhat firm type of footing, the horse that I'm most interested in betting is Hey Gammon. And I know that there's going to be some hesitation maybe with Hey Gammon's ability to be effective at a mile. And you sort of look through those races from last year. I mean, he really, on a firm turf course at Longchamp in the middle of 2018, he barely missed in a Group 1 at a mile. So he's a horse that definitely can be effective at this distance. And the fact that he's got a little bit of speed and can get over and maybe get close to this pace. You know, we talked about this last week, too. For a Breeders' Cup mile, there's a real shortage of early speed in here.
Yeah.
And what Eurico Rosa da Silva does with El Tormenta may really determine what ends up happening in this race, because he was pretty much on top of that quick Woodbine mile pace and still stayed on, as was Got Stormy, who looks to be maybe almost in control of this race pace-wise, because Gaffalion can sort out what's going on in that opening quarter mile and then get her into a position. The other horse that I want to make sure I use in any kind of multi is Lucullin. And I'm glad Lucullin was able to get into the race. I know that he was a little wonky down the stretch of the Woodbine mile. I thought that he was probably a little too far back. I'd like to see him a little bit more forwardly placed and hopefully able to save some ground, because this thing looks like it'll be a scramble in the opening, in the final half mile, especially if the pace is moderate. You're talking about potentially 8 or 10 horses really stacked on top of each other, and the one who gets the best trip will end up winning.
Well, and you've got, as it happens, you've got a couple of riders on horses that know when to move here, and you could get sort of a a bunch of horses moving a little bit earlier. So that frenzy, that's going to, you know, if you want somebody that's coming from off the pace in this, I think it's a big dice roll, more or less. You know, you're one of a few people that have sniffed out Hey Gaman, and I asked Nick Luck the other day about James Tate, and Tate has got one horse on both days, and Nick basically said what a serious horseman he is, and that he would not be here with Dream Shot, and with. Hey Gaman, if he didn't think both could be competitive. So I like it, Nick. The late pick three, Distaff Turf and Classic.
Hey, and no question. I mean, Midnight Bees is clearly the horse to beat, likely to be the shortest price on these 2 days, or at least close to it, the shortest price on this card, I would say. And I'm not going to go on a big rant about why she's beatable or why you should spend a whole lot of money doing so. I'm just going to say that while acknowledging that she's the horse to beat, the horse that I'm going to bet is Dunbar Road. I felt like Dunbar Road handled the class test in getting to grade one competition against older fillies last time. Probably was not on the best part of the racetrack. I like Jose Ortiz getting back on board, and I think that the race will unfold favorably for her. I think there should be enough pace to set things up. Serengeti Empress is... There's a little bit of concern on my part that Serengeti Empress might be able to get away from this field, and I'll tell you this.
Yeah, you talked about that the other day.
And I'm still on that. And if you believe when we get to this point that there's any kind of, I don't want to call it a bias, but obviously Santa Anita notoriously has been a place where forwardly placed horses have done well. If you believe that there's any of that going on, upgrade Serengeti Empress, because her two-turn races, her pace figures going really any distance make her so much faster than this field. And I'm pretty sure Tom Amos is going to make it clear to Flavian Pratt that it's time to go right out of the gate. And really, if she can beat Mosi Cal and Paradise Woods to the lead, she's going to have it as comfortably as she wants. I think that, barring whatever happens with Secret Spice, but I don't think Secret Spice is getting into it, a tooth-and-nail pace battle. All that said, I think Dunbar Road gets the right setup, and I think that that she'll be in good position. I love the... everything going on here, the up-and-coming aspect of it, and the fact that she should be about 6 or 7 to 1.
Nice. Turf Classic.
You know, I'm going to make a daily double from Dunbar Road and Serengeti Empress into Anthony Van Dyke, and I'm going to take a slightly, not a negative opinion of Bricks and Mortar. I'm of the opinion that Bricks and Mortar is probably more effective at a mile and a quarter and shorter. I'm not exactly certain that the mile and a half is what he wants. Anthony Van Dyke is a very atypically campaigned Aidan O'Brien Breeders' Cup horse in that they made a decision almost 2 months ago that this horse was coming to Santa Anita. And we almost every year see these horses show up for O'Brien, and they've run in a race in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and it just seems like, hey, we're loading the plane, plop him or her on there too. That's not the case with this horse. They knew very early on this is a firm ground horse. His only poor performances have come on soft turf courses. He's getting firm ground, and I think the mile and a half suits him pretty much better than anybody else. Between him and Old Persian, Bricks and Mortar is going to face the two best horses he has all year, and that really includes a lot all of this domestic contingent that he sort of made look foolish. Old Persian got a great setup in the Northern Dancer, looked very effective doing it. The reason why I still want to include him is Charlie Appleby has been unbelievable in terms of spotting horses in this Breeders' Cup. 3 for 6 lifetime, 4 in the money, 4 in the exacta, and I think the plan with Old Persian to come over and get him a race in Canada, ultimately to set him up to go here, was very astutely done. As far as the classic goes, I spent a lot of time looking for alternatives in this race to what looked to McKenzie and anybody else that's favored. I'm going to bet Yoshida. I'm going to bet Yoshida with Vino Rosso and Code of Honor. I'll use McKenzie basically defensively. And my thought with Yoshida is that when you look back at this race afterwards and you see that he won, you're going to look at his PPs and you're going to say, hey, he was fast enough, he's pretty much consistent enough, and he was going to get a pace set up. And with all of that stacked on top of one another, I'll take him at 10 to 1 over just about anybody else at a shorter price. I think that Vino Rosso and Code of Honor, respectively in terms of running styles and the way they're coming into this race, both based on workout reports and what was a good Jockey Club Gold Cup to me, they look like logical horses. So that's where I ended up. I'm not going to be surprised if McKenzie wins. I do think Rosario is a good fit for him, but I also think there's a little bit too much uncertainty with him being in a race with a faster pace at a mile and a quarter, not necessarily knowing where he's going to be positioned. I'll take a swing against that, especially with a horse that's going to be 2 to 1 or so.
Yeah, I pretty much, you know, I've got Vino Yoshida on as the top two with McKenzie third and a little late running Seeking the Soul. You know, that was my express bet approach too. So we're simpatico. Nick, obviously, big opportunities. Best of luck and fund that college fund early for the baby. Get that college money put away by Saturday night.
We're going to try and get it going real early.
And do it. Forget the races. Start it now.
That's right.
That was the best advice somebody gave me, and I'll tell you what.
Yeah, there
great.
You go. There you go. Nick Tamaro, everybody. NTAMM, NTAMM 1215. Reach out to him on Twitter. Congratulate him on the birth of a daughter and a new adventure for the NTAM. Nick, thanks.
Thank you, guys. Good luck.
Nick Tamaro will stay right here, and we've got finally, it took all week to get Pete Fornatale here, and I got the two sets. There you go. That is warm. That's it. They got the warm ears. The ears are there we go.
Musical headsets happening here.
It's the first time. I'm glad I put in the third one. We'll get Jonathan on the phone. That's what we'll do, because JK is just a typical early morning start for Jonathan, or is it?
He was a taste of the world. So the over under on what time he'd wake up this morning was about 7:45 a.m. So we'll see. I haven't made contact, but I'll keep blowing up his phone until he answers. Or, you know, we could just try to call him.
Well, that's what I'm going to do.
We're going to have
we'll have Deja call Jonathan now, yeah. And I'm giving her the information. And let me make sure she's got. Let me know if you don't have that number. But you should. It's in the system, obviously, because we've talked to him plenty. But usually, when it comes to Breeders' Cup and Triple Crown races, Derby particularly, we're right in front. In fact, what popped up yesterday for us, Pete, on the Facebook memories was that picture of you and Marshall and Jake
Ballas, Black and, Type Thoroughbreds.
Yeah, and Jonathan of us at Churchill last year.
That was such a fun visit. And Jake Ballas, another new father, had a choice this weekend. He's a lifelong Astros fan, and he had the choice of whether to, he had the capital to spend to potentially come to the Breeders' Cup or go. In his mind, he thought, watch his Astros win the World Series. He made the wrong call.
Yes, he did.
Oh well, that'll happen.
Him and Mattress Mack made the wrong call.
Yeah. Is there an official count on what, you know, because there was some argument the other night watching the game, what Mack had actually, what he had bet in terms of dollars. Everybody seemed to know that what he was going to win had the Astros won.
What I heard is that he bet at various points along the way.
Yes.
The goal being to cover the cost of this promotion of his. And I mean, I did hear several numbers bandied about, but you know, I thought I heard numbers between like 12 and 15 million.
Yeah,
of risk.
That's what I had. That was the number I had had heard. So you know, those of you that those of you that bought the mattresses, everybody, right? They don't get refunds.
No, you're on the hook now. If you spend over $3,000, you've got to pay. You looked about a 1-5 shot to get away with it.
Heading back to Minute Maid.
But yeah. It was not meant to be.
Well, as was noted the other day, they played those games at Minute Maid, and there was lots of juice for those small casinos that took the action. They got, you know, there were probably some guys at some of those far flung casinos. You know, that we're taking a little bit of a risk, because, I mean...
Yeah, that's fair.
Mac found, you know, these crazy, you know, hole-in-the-wall casinos.
Mississippi, I know he was doing some work over there.
Well, that we got 2 days of Breeders' Cup to get out.
Well,
maybe the Breeders' Cup handle will be up in Eastern Texas.
Let me ask, Jonathan, has Mac reached out to you to touch your bankroll? Are you helping at all?
No. I would imagine that Mac is feeling unhappy, but, you know, see what I did there? Unhappy?
Yeah. But I'm bummed. R. Goodness. Well, you left the R.
It's too early for that kind of humor.
Drop the R for savings. or whatever that. Whatever. Leave the last. Leave the last S.
1-800-DIAL-A-MATTRESS. Leave off the last S because that's the one for
savings. Now Mac's really going to be upset because we're advertising a competitive betting firm.
I think they're long gone.
Crazy Eddie. Should we move on to Crazy Eddie?
The practice price is so low they're practically insane.
You've got that. You got the look. You got the Eddie look. I love it. Are you not?
He's not. We don't get. We don't have
hammer
in the mic.
Hold on. Let me.
Try that.
Leave the headset on. Leave the headset on.
Yeah, then you won't be able to hear Jonathan.
Exactly.
Now
use the mic. How about that? Say hello now.
Push that button over.
You must have turned it off. You turned the mic off.
Having some technical. I'm glad to see our show, JK, isn't the only one.
I'm not a big karaoke guy. That's what it is. I run too many people out of the building. But I wanted to take this time to publicly thank Peter and Jonathan. They did me a big favor by coming on and spoke to the class, one of my classes at the University of Arizona. The subject was the horse player, and these guys were kind enough to come on for an hour or so and delve out some of their knowledge of what horse players do and what kind of information they're looking for and maybe some places to go in the future. And it was wonderful. The kids loved it. And we actually have turned that phone call into a we're going to have a panel on the horse player.
That's
and
great.
And you know what we can do now in the modern age to make things better for the horse player. I want to thank you and Marshall Graham and Mike Maloney also came on the week before that Pete helped me get together. So I'm giving the students a little some real life stuff, and it's great. You can tell the expressions when they're hearing from these are the guys that are in the game. There's no textbook stuff here. This is real life stuff. So I can't thank Pete enough and Jonathan and the other guys for coming on.
I know that we all appreciated the opportunity and what a great idea that was for you, for these young minds who are going to the future of the racing business, right? These are people who want to devote their lives to this, and to have an opportunity for them to get to talk to what we view as one of the key pillars of the stool of racing, the horse player. It was an absolute pleasure. And I understand some of your students are around here. I'm supposed to be meeting up and answering some questions and chatting. So.
Alex was here yesterday. He said he wanted your number. I said, of course Pete will talk to you. So,
absolutely. We're going to meet up today now that most of the work is done.
Right.
Well, most of it, but not all of it. Let's get Jonathan and Pete started with their ping pong conversation about the action and where they've landed. And JK, first of all, in terms of the way the two cards lay out, what's your overall thoughts going in about where to leverage bankroll on the 2 days?
I mean, you know, it's typical of me that and as a favorite, I'm gravitating. I'm a fan of the game. I love greatness, and my mind works in a way where I'm going to look at the fastest horse and figure out how I can make some money if that fast horse shows up. I think that there's some favorites that are vulnerable, and I think there's some favorites that are very likely. So I think part of my game plan over the next 2 days is going to be to kind of zig and zag those favorites. Bricks and Mortar, I'm going to be against. Midnight Bisou, I'm going to be against. Dennis's Moment, I'm going to be four. Matoli Chancelot, I'm going to be four. So I'm just going to try to, hopefully I'm zigging when they're zagging. We'll see.
No, fair, Pete. Your overall impression going in and kind of a theme that you have sensed over the 2 days?
I feel like the USA contingent throughout the 2 days of the Breeders' Cup feels a little bit underrated to me, especially in terms of star power. I've seen people complaining a bit about, where's the true superstar? I think we've got four or five of them with the potential for more. I'm just really excited to see 2 days of championship level racing. And in terms of wagering, there's a couple of places that I'm willing to pin my colors to the mast in terms of the multi-race bets. With the anchor leg on day one, I'm a big Dennis's Moment fan. I was already, and he out here at the Breakfast Marquee in the mornings getting to clap eyes on him and see what he looks like in the flesh. I'm going to be very happy to have a decent part of my Friday today going through him. And on Saturday, I can't get past Omaha Beach. I mean, there's so many great stories, and there's reasonable alternatives in the Dirt Mile, but that's a place where I'm going to be running a lot of my action through and then having an opportunity to spread in some of the other legs. I'm so excited about these 15% takeout pick fives. I thought that was a great move by Breeders' Cup, and on a day like this, I'm willing to take some swings and try to really catch something in those, knowing, really feeling like I'm getting the best of it. So those are two of my main wagering ideas and sort of my overarching theme for you.
Excellent. I wanted to get that established. Let's kind of walk through, and you guys can go back and forth. Juvenile Turf Sprint, Jonathan.
Yeah, I only need two in here. I think this wraps up a pick five and starts a pick five. So I'm only going to use the two Rusty Ward runners. Kamari obviously has been the story all year with being one of his best chances to win at Royal Ascot. Obviously didn't get the job done, but ran a winning race. So that horse obviously is the kind of star power, the name for Wesley. But the figures are just all a little bit slower than I would prefer them to be, especially compared to the stablemate four-wheel drive. Those are the only two I'm going to use. Nick Luck has made really good cases for Alligator Alley. We were actually fortunate enough yesterday to drive back to the starting gate with Michael McCarthy to watch one of his babies break, and Alligator Alley popped out of the gate right there in front of us, like in our in you know 15 feet away from us, and he seemed to break from the gate fine. And I know Nick Luck has expressed that was one of his biggest issues he's had. So if he breaks, I imagine he'll run better. It's just the Wesleys for me. My top pick will be four-wheel drive.
Not a ton of meat left on the bone for me in that race after J.K. went, but I will talk briefly about Ali, who I saw at Ascot and backed at Ascot. I've been a huge fan of all year, and I love that they've been pointing to this race all year. I wonder if the configuration is going to end up being a little bit sharp, but this is one that I need to have at least in second, third, fourth, I think on class and speed. This is one that's going to factor in, but on the win end, I think four-wheel drive and Kamari do look very, very tough, and I defer to Nick Luck on Alligator Alley, and it would seem silly to watch the horse pop from the gate in front of you when that's the concern and not at least use the horse somewhere in terms of exotics.
Pete, real quick, on your European knowledge, so horses that run in the straight, as the Alley horse has, problem making a left turn, or how do they school them a little bit? What makes you feel comfortable to take a horse that's never done it on paper to bet on?
I think I want a horse that gives me the overall impression that they're going to be up to the task. So obviously best of all is if you've had form at Leopardstown or Chester or a place that has an American style turn. But failing that, when I look at a one like Daye in the Juvenile Fillies Turf, and her physical type and the way she's bred, she's just handy, and I think she's going to have no problem. Whereas Albina, tons of class, but bigger, more of an Oaks filly. Already you can sort of see the stamina, how late she produces her run. I'm a little more concerned. I mean, yeah. Look, on class she could just win anyway, and it might not matter. But those are the types of assessments I make. And then obviously connections who've had success at the meeting before, they know. They're not going to make too many errors. I mean, sometimes they might take a shot, but they're not going to make too many errors in judgment as far as that goes. So those are the type of things I look at.
Juvenile Turf, Jonathan, both of the girl and boy race, really fun. And there's a lot of interesting horses that you could feather in or key off of. What'd you do here?
Yeah, I mean, I think Arizona is the most likely winner drawn to the outside, but I'm concerned, obviously, about the draw. It's a kind of a quick run into that first turn. Here at Santa Anita, and so obviously we'll need to get a little bit lucky. Ryan Moore has done that in the past. He did it with Hit It A Bomb from the 14 at Keeneland. He found a way to get over and to get the best horse home there. So Arizona makes sense to me. I wish I liked some of the American horses a little bit better, but the two that I do like the most are Our Country and Decorated Invader. I think Decorated Invader showed his class up at Woodbine when he ran there. Has been training well from all accounts. And I think that he's sitting on a nice race. And then I'm going to give Our Country another shot as well. I think Our Country is a horse who has been ridden by Manny Franco in every start and getting a switch to John Velasquez. And I don't think Manny necessarily did anything wrong. I just think that for whatever reason, sometimes the relationship between rider and horse can just kind of go astray. And for whatever reason, they weren't clicking. And his he was being kind of a naughty horse for Manny. And who knows, down on the inside, he might be naughty for Johnny as well, throwing his head and whatnot. But if he can relax down on the inside, saving ground on both turns, I think our country is dangerous at a price. I'll pick our country just because I think the price is better. But the other two that I mentioned, Decorated Invader and Arizona, will be used equally on all of my tickets.
I'm a big Arizona fan. One of the things I like to do when prepping for Breeders' Cup is go back and look at the PPs of horses that ran well and won these races. And Arizona's PP just looks so much like so many horses who've had success in this spot. I think, you know, there are concerns. JK mentioned the post. There's also the ground. But this is one I'm not going to be letting beat me. I have no knocks on the others JK mentioned. I will throw in Vitology. Just to get a call. This is a horse who I think is progressive and improving and has reasons to be running late. And if they go too fast, if it sets up for an off-the-pace runner, Vitology, I think, could get a lot here.
Well, I just realized I've been sitting here for 2 days.
He's got the Arizona hat.
The hat. It's got the big A on it.
It just, Arizona. It just registered.
You've got to. You've got to back him.
I'm in.
There it is.
It's a little thing.
Well, one of the things that I always talk about every year is the various jocks that are in for one mount. Miguel Mena comes in today. He traveled yesterday. Mena with Peace Achieved. And I got Peace Achieved prominent, he and Vitology, out of that bourbon. And you won't have to worry that Miguel Mena won't be focused and doing everything he can to carry Peace Achieved the last portion of that race. I mean, I didn't pick him to win, but I picked Vitology. But everybody knows I'm a huge Miguel Mena fan and would love to see him score in a Breeders' Cup. Jonathan, let's get to the late pick three, the Juvenile Fillies, the Juvenile Philly Turf, and the Juvenile before we turn to Saturday.
The late pick three, that's famously the bet you play when you get knocked out on the first two legs.
exactly.
Look, Dona Veloce, I've been hanging out with Peter Thomas for Natal, so I got Dona Veloce right. But
that was good.
Thank you very much, Pete. I've been working hard on my Italian pronunciation. The rail is tough down there for a horse that has had three starts. And being down on the inside for a horse who's lightly raced, who's stretching out, it's a lot of questions, a lot of issues. The horse has probably never sat behind a horse and ate the dirt. Has never had to go that fast and go two turns. She's a very likely winner because she's so fast, and this race is kind of a little bit hungry. But I'm going to try to play against her. I'm not really a British Idiom fan. I really don't love Bast. I'm not crazy about Wicked Whisper. Paul Matisse made a great case for KP Dreaming to improve, so I can probably get a little bit interest there. I'm going to kind of go back to Perfect Alibi. I thought Perfect Alibi had a right to be a really good horse based on some of her previous races where she was buried down on the inside at Saratoga, where that's not where you want it to be. Her figures just haven't really jumped up and grabbed me. But that short stretch at Keeneland is tricky, and I will forgive horses for not running well in that short stretch, and I'll also downgrade horses who do run well. So Perfect Alibi is one that I'll be trying to get hooked up with some of those other horses.
Pete?
I'm a British Idiom fan. I race design-wise, I think it's going to set up well. I loved how she looked in the morning. I'm going to keep it very simple and go with British Idiom in this year's Juvenile Fillies.
All right. Pete, go on with it. Juvenile Philly Turf.
In the Juvenile Philly Turf, I'm going to take a shot with a couple of the USA runners who I think are going to be overpriced, and those two are Cristal and Sharing. Cristal, both of whom were just so impressive to me physically and on the racetrack in Saratoga, and I feel like Cristal the last day felt like a prep to me. Feels like she can come on from that run. And Sharing, too. I thought she was staying on well late in that race. And, I mean, what a great Breeders' Cup pedigree. I'm extremely interested in those two. And I'll probably be doing a little bit of a double win bet there as well.
I picked Sharing and absolutely used Cristal in the exotics place. Jonathan?
Yeah, I like Sharing a lot as well. This is the second time I'll mention him. It could be three or four more times. Paul Matisse taught me a long time ago that turf horses that run well on the dirt are a different kind of good. Like they are just a talent that will help them get through a lot of obstacles throughout their career. And Sharing is one of those to me. She's tactical. She ran well sprinting. She ran well long, and she ran well sprinting on the dirt. I think she's going to be dangerous from the outside.
and I think she could run well. But my top pick is Cristal. I think there's an argument to be made that Cristal should be undefeated. Obviously she had the trip last time. She had the bad DQ the time before that. I think that John Kimmel's got this one ready to rock and roll, and I think she's going to run really well. And then I'm going to use all the Europeans that Pete mentioned. That's kind of my default in here. I find a couple Americans I like, and then I throw in the ones from across the pond.
Turn to the boys and the capper on the day. That'll probably create a Derby winter book type horse in Dennis's Moment or in Eight Rings, potentially even Scabbard, etc. We lost Maxfield, which is too bad, but it doesn't make this race all that much less interesting. Jonathan, can we lean on Dennis's Moment?
Well, I was going to ask you guys what you thought of it. I am still contemplating the $15,000 both ticket all-in move on Dennis's Moment to turn that into 30, wake up tomorrow morning and be feeling good about where I'm at. That's what I'm thinking about doing. I guess it matters if I'm going to have a adult beverage before the race. That would probably push me over the edge. But I think Dennis's Moment, from what I understand and what I've seen, it just looks like he might be one of those freaky good horses. I think Eight Rings obviously has done some things that can excite people, but I've also heard a lot of negative around Eight Rings. I wish Dennis's Moment was drawn outside and kind of would be a no-brainer from there. But I think Irad will figure out something to do here. I think Dennis's Moment will kind of get away from there running, and I think he'll get into a very comfortable position, and I think he could open up and show us all something special to get us excited about the next Kentucky Derby. So Dennis's Moment will be the top pick. Still trying to decide how high on the list he is.
Pete?
I tipped my hand on this one before. I'm all about Dennis's Moment, but I do think Scabbard is an interesting one, either to run second or third in verticals, or if you decide not, JK, to put every cent on Dennis's Moment, I do see a scenario where maybe Dennis's Moment and the Eight Rings hook up too early, and if it starts to fall apart a little bit, Scabbard can win the whole thing. So those are the two for me, but a massive preference for Dennis's Moment.
Let's get to Saturday, and what I want to do, we're going to start to get tight for time. So, Jonathan, why don't we look at the late pick five, start with that sprint.
Look, I think this is a race that I want to be, I want to have some money left, because I think that, I've been joking that my two favorite horses in this entire weekend are in the same race, Matoli and Chancelot. I think they're both going to run well. I don't know who's going to run better. I think Chancelot's loose. I think being in California has helped. Matoli's been out there, too. I think one of those two is going to win. My top pick will be Chancelot.
I don't have much to add, but I'd flip the order, I suppose. I think things are going to trip out very nicely for Matoli. He's one of the horses being out here all week that has impressed me every single time I've clapped eyes on him. But I would want to have some savers with Chancelot as well in case he can just wire him.
Mile.
Long shots for me in here. I'm going to take a shot with Lord Glitters, who I think is going to be a 20-to-1 type price and fits on his best form. Had a big excuse for me in the race in Canada when Oscar Performance was allowed to dictate terms, and I thought ran a pretty good buried race. So I'm interested there. And I'm also interested in Without Parole. I think he's here for a reason. And, again, another one. You can look at the best bits of form, the St. James's Palace win. That fits. I think the Lasix could help a lot. That might be why he came over here, and I think the horse is going to be a big, big number.
Jonathan?
Well, I agree with everything that Pete said. I love that Without Parole has been working with Bricks and Mortar. It's a handicapping axiom I use throughout the years. It's not more about the grade. It's about who they're working with, and so that's an upgrade for me. I think Uni's going to run well from out here. I like the Europeans that Pete mentioned. My biggest opinion here is I'm against Dot Stormy. I thought she got a setup at Saratoga. She was in great form. And I don't care if she moved early at Woodbine. She got beat by El Tormenta. She's not winning the mile. My top pick in here will be Uni.
Jonathan, a little bit of interference on your line. Run through the late pick three, Distaff Turf Classic.
I'm going to try to beat Midnight Bisou here, and I'm going to do it with Dunbar Road. I think she spent a lot of time down on the inside at Keeneland, facing Olders for the first time. I think she's going to run well in here. I was actually telling someone that last night at Taste of the World that I liked Dunbar Road, and standing right behind me was Chad Brown. He said, I agree with you, but what do I know? I think she'll run well. Anthony Van Dyke, I'm against bricks and mortar. Paul made a great case for Anthony Van Dyke, this being kind of where they were pointing with Aiden O'Brien, and he feels like Aiden means business, and I agree with that. I think that he could run well. Channel Maker's one I'll use underneath. And then in the Classic, I ended up landing on a late. I think that she's primed to run well in a mile and a quarter. I think that some of her disappointing efforts have been at distances that don't suit her, in scenarios that don't suit her, and I think that this is going to be Bill Mott with a target, like my friend Pete always says. So I think that late's going to run well. I don't know if she'll necessarily win. I think she can win, but I think she's a very likely horse to hit the board.
Interesting.
I can run it through real quick. I'm a big Midnight Bisou fan. I understand where J.K. is coming from trying to beat her, but the more I look at the race, the more I keep coming back to her. I'm going to have most of the money in that race going through Midnight Bisou. I'm with Valley Doyle in the turf, not just Anthony Van Dyke, but also Mount Everest, who I thought looked fantastic at his flesh the other day. Progressive, unexposed three-year-old. Coming here for a reason. I think he'll be in the Highland Reel role to Anthony Van Dyke's Found role with a little bit of team tactics. I kind of want to have both of them on my team. And then in the Classic, my main opinion is let's get Seeking the Soul somewhere. Third, fourth, second. You know, I don't think he can win unless it's a proper collapse, but I'm going to spread other contenders, logical contenders, around in the top slots and get Seeking the Soul somewhere and hopefully get paid at this year's Breeders' Cup.
You know, the end of you guys, we've had three or four handicappers on this morning. There's one filly that's been mentioned by everybody, Dunbar Road.
Mm-hmm.
That we didn't hear before. Another night of handicapping, and it intrigues me that I've heard her name this morning that we didn't hear yesterday.
If you made me pick, yeah, I mean, I'm not anti at all. I mean, I definitely see the case. I just I'm deferring to Midnight Bisou, but if there, I said most of it goes through there, a little bit for me, and you know, partially out of deference to the likes of J.K. and Paul, will include that number as well.
And then Jonathan, anywhere else on the card? Filly and mare sprint, turf sprint. Anything else that we didn't talk about?
Turf sprint, I think Pure Sensation is going to run well, drawn down to the inside. I think Belvoir Bay is going to run well in the turf sprint as well. Those are two horses that I'll be using. And then the filly and mare sprint. Look, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Covfefe. We'll have to see how the rail is going to play over the next 2 days. She can absolutely win, but I've been continuously drawn to Selcourt, home game for John Sadler. She's got some back numbers that are really impressive. She's drawn to the outside, and she's been training at Santa Anita on a racetrack that's a little bit deeper than some might expect, and I think that the horses that have been in California will have a little bit of an upgrade there.
Anything else?
For me, I'll throw another one out in the turf sprint. I get Pure Sensation a lot. I think he'll be the best of speed. I'm very interested in Imprimis and hopefully a decent number to come running. This was a horse who I thought was slowed down by at a key point in the race last time and has more in him, trending back in the right direction. Ran so well earlier in the year. I'm not getting beat by Imprimis.
And two favorites, yes, no. Omaha Beach, yes, no.
No for me.
It's a yes. Yeah, we disagree on that.
It's a yes for Pete, a no for Jonathan.
I think he'll run well, and I think that he's the most likely winner, but I think there's a lot of reasons you can look at elsewhere, and Mr. Money is one of those reasons for me.
Sister Charlie, yes, no.
Making you go first on this one, JK.
Yes, I think she's a very likely winner. Firm turf, mile and a quarter, I think is probably her perfect distance, and how good is she? I think she'll run well here.
I almost hope I'm wrong, but I'm going to say no, and I'm going to take a little shot with Fleeting and Iridesa in that spot. Wouldn't be surprised at all if Sister Charlie sticks it to me, and, you know, for multis, I'm not going to be getting eliminated. I'm not, like, lining up to oppose her, but I do see some other ways to go in there.
Wow. Jonathan Ginchin, UT Big Hair for everybody, and Looms Boldly, Pete Fornatel. Good luck, both, and enjoy the 2 days.
Thank you, my friend.
And you guys will be up in the Baldwin Terrace, the new...
I will be there at least part of the day covering, we might as well give a plug to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge.
Yeah, yes, of course.
Big numbers have come in this year. So glad to see it rebound in such a big way. It was a little bit level from 2 years ago going into last year, but back on the right trajectory. New contest room. I haven't spent any time in there yet, but I'll be bopping around, and that'll certainly be one of the stops. Hopefully maybe doing a little bit of contest coverage for Breeders' Cup, their Facebook Live page, and I'll certainly be sending out some updates on Twitter as well for those who want to follow along and see who's going to be this year's Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge champion.
This has turned into the contest besides the Vegas contest of the year, hasn't
it? They're the two best ones. You know, 1 and 1A in either order, just depending on what you're gunning for. In terms of wagering opportunity, this is unbelievable. In terms of experiential, there's nothing better than being out in Vegas in the ballroom at NHC. But they're very different animals, but they clearly stand atop everything else at the moment in the contest world.
JK, where are you hanging?
I am hanging in the trophy lounge right underneath where the Eddie Logan is, which is kind of like on the first floor. So I'll be hanging out there and then just kind of cruising.
Do you have a ticket for me, JK?
Just say media.
Well, it depends.
Say media. Yeah, no, I'm going to name a horse. Just say media.
I think media is shot on site with the fancy people down there. What are the conditions here, Jonathan?
Yeah, they're very proud of that room. But, yes, I got you a ticket, Pete.
Oh, look at that. It's good to know. Steve, we plucked him from obscurity, and once in a while we get a little bit of recompense.
There it is. Perfect. Perfect. Jonathan, good luck. Go get it.
See you guys.
JK.
See you out here later, Jonathan.
Pete Fornitz out. We've got Jeff Siegel is going to join us. Mike Welch. Jimmy Ventura. And we got to find Ed at some point. Pete, what are you off to? It's up to you.
I'm definitely up for hanging out. I thought I was getting kicked out of
no,
here.
The rest is via technology anyway, so it's fine. We're going to reach out for Jeff Siegel and get final thoughts from as sharp a guy as the we've had a parade today. I mean, between Scully, Tamaro, JK, and Pete. Jeff Siegel next. We're going to get some of the last clocking thoughts from Welsh, and we got to find Eddie at some point. He wasn't around early this morning with the Scully. So you're not getting Ed. You're getting Jeff Siegel next, if you would, Deja, please. Jeff Siegel here. Okay. Yeah. All right, Pete. Who's in town that you've already seen, and you know some of the cognoscenti of the contest world?
We had a great scene in the Eddie Logan suite here yesterday with a bunch of people around. Marshall Graham in the house. Pat Cummings in town to be playing in the contest. We had I don't know if he's playing in the contest or not, but it was fun to see Coach Patino down there as well. Leo Vukmanovic, very excited to be playing in the contest. He'll be one of the places I'm visiting today over in his table. But I mean, I'm hearing the numbers are really big. So now, granted, you can play online.
Yeah,
that's
a big part of it.
But I would imagine that we're gonna have people from 28 states here. So I'm looking forward to getting to see him. Dave Nichols, another name we've talked about on the show. There was a lot of drama. A lot of people playing in Logan yesterday were going close, looking for that coveted second Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge entry. And it didn't end up going to anybody in the room because of the big long shot in the last. But it was fun to follow along. I know I miss covering contests on the day-to-day basis. We do plenty with contest players on the podcast, and obviously I get to talk about them with you every week. But it's fun to be in that milieu and see how people are doing and watching things develop. And there should be some great storylines today. I think Chuck Grubbs is back. I saw a couple of NHC champions yesterday as well. Jose Arias, who won the first one that I ever covered. And then we saw Jim Bennis from Chicago, professional player who used to play in Illinois exclusively, recently moved his circuit to Southern California and has had a great run of success since doing so. Somebody that I always root for in these events. Been texting a bit with Frank McGoey, not making it out here this year. But another player who is a ridiculously popular guest whenever he comes on the podcast. Have you ever had McGoey, Frank McGoey on? Mm-hmm. Incredible character.
We had him in the press box at Fairgrounds.
Oh, that's perfect.
Came down after clocking, and we had a really fun hour this past spring, which was really enjoyable. And I've had some meals, Louisville, the Derby Week, the Derby Week with him and the brother, and you know that whole circle of lunatics.
Some of their friends were around, but they weren't. I think I caught them before they started drinking, so they didn't cause any trouble. They weren't holding up the home team flag as well as I thought. Those Louisiana boys, they get after it.
What about Dookie? Where's the Dukester?
I haven't clapped eyes on him yet, but I would think he's shorter than even money to be here. I can't see him just playing at home. It's the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita, but I'll text him right now and see if he's
what the Dukester is up to. He's been very quiet, almost too quiet. So when it comes to Duke Matisse, he'll make his presence felt. We don't have to worry about that. And making his presence felt for XBTV and ExpressBet.